Come on, G, kick it.
Wednesday evening, September 28th, the Tip of the Tower Raptors podcast is back here to talk everything Raptors. We got a lot to talk about today. Raptors Media Day took place on Monday. You got the team heading out west for training camp. Chris Bosh likely not going to play again. Kevin Garnett retiring. There's a whole bunch of basketball news to talk about, which is great. Joining me, as always, is Damar Grant. Damar, how you doing, man?
Great. Media Day is over. Into training camp. And the season's finally starting. It's actually happening.
That's probably the most, like, mellow great I've ever heard. Like, for somebody who said they're great, you're like, just great. Like,
you just, like, just whispered up.
That's better. There you go. Now I believe you. But jumping right into the Raptors here. Media Day was on Monday. Whole bunch of takeaways. I mean, I wouldn't say there's an overwhelming amount of information, but, you know, we got some stuff to talk about here, including Damari Carroll's health, Jared Sullinger likely starting at power forward, Pascal Siakam potentially having an increased role, DeLon Wright getting closer to shooting. There's some stuff here to talk about. Let's start with Damari Carroll. Obviously, he had arthroscopic knee surgery in the offseason. He's still rehabbing his way back. He actually didn't do much physical activity during the offseason. He just rested. Now he's progressed to playing 5-on-5 and is looking like he's slowly inching closer to a return. But at the same time, he admitted that he's not 100%. Are you at all concerned by this news?
Yes, dude. I'm
really?
Yeah,
okay,
no, it's actually making me super worried because, like, it's kept him out of, like, part of last season, the majority of last season, right? And he came back for the playoffs, and now he's out again, and he's not even 100%. You know, you give somebody a really long contract, and he's going into his 30s. Like, he's 30 now. I think he'll be 33 by the end of the contract. And we have this knee issue, and knee issues when you get old are not they're not chronic, but they don't necessarily just go away, as Dwayne Wade. So,
well, they linger, right? They're going to slow him down as he gets older. Like you just said, he'll be 33 at the end of this contract, and his legs aren't getting any younger.
Yeah, he's only getting paid, like, $13 million, which was, like, a huge amount, you know, when they signed him, but now with, you know, the salary cap jump, they, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, if this knee thing persists, it could become an albatross, man.
Man, that's bold. Well, how many games do you think he has to play for it to be, like, a
worthwhile
season?
I need at least 60 games.
60 games? Okay, that's what I was thinking, too.
And that's,
I think he could get 60. I think that's not a problem.
60 games, and then I need playoff games from him as well, so.
Yeah, that's why I'm not panicking too much yet, because I feel like if they take it easy with him to start the season and kind of ease him back into things, as long as we get that back half in the playoffs, that's what's important in my opinion.
That's true, but, you know, we're a month from the season starting, and, you know, we're getting updates saying he's not 100%.
Yeah, I find that part concerning a little bit. I'm not overly concerned, but it's definitely, you know, raise an eyebrow. The other thing I thought about that was interesting with him, too, is he said one of his goals was to have a healthy season.
Mm-hmm.
Before, in the summer at his camp, he said, obviously, you know, health is a main priority. But at the same time, he was saying, shoot 40% from three. He was a little bit more narrow with his goals, whereas now it's just kind of like, hey, if I get on the court and I play and contribute, that's great. So I was kind of like, oh, okay, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, that makes me a little bit worried, man. You know, clear and concise goals is what your teachers teach you in elementary school. And, like, yeah. The broader they're getting when he gets closer to the season, that's making me, like, think that he doesn't think he's going to get to 100%, maybe like 90 or something like that towards the season. I don't know, it's just like this entire saga ever since the beginning of basically last season has made me a little frightful when I'm talking about Damari Carroll, man.
There's reason for concern, like I must admit. I mean, again, I'm not overly concerned, but there's reason for concern, and man, I hope you're wrong.
Yo,
I really hope you're wrong with that.
They have him for the next 3 years, then don't worry about it.
How much do you think his liver disease plays a factor in his body actually maintaining a healthy, like, man, I just think he's not able to stay healthy because of his liver disease at times.
Yeah, he's got that and plus the knee injury, and I don't, it's, let's get, like, it's not helping the knee injury, right? So, oh.
that is a discouraging sigh, my friend. I mean, man.
But he is a good,
I'm like, very curious.
Don't get me wrong. Like, even like 80% or 90% of Damari Carroll is still a good player, especially on this team. You know.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Especially with his ability to play like a swing position where he can play the three or a stretch four.
Right.
That's a valuable commodity on this Raptors team, especially come playoff time. When you look at how the East shapes out, they're going to need a guy like that.
Exactly. You don't necessarily need to be super fast to play stretch four, which is probably one of the biggest reasons why the Raptors got him. So, Ruby,
and the Raptors themselves, like, the Raptors don't necessarily play at a blistering tempo either, so.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll be good for now, you know. But you just prefer to have somebody at 100%. That's the reason why we're worried.
Totally agree. And I feel like this is the storyline that's going to linger for, man, at least until he proves he can play consecutive games healthy, and he just shows that he looks like the Damari Carroll that they're accustomed to. If that doesn't happen, this is going to be a growing storyline, I think.
I mean, that feeling of, like, where he lingers until, you know, he falls down or, like, he bumps knees with somebody and you're not holding your breath, being like, oh, no, not the knee. It's like it used to happen with Steph Curry every time he would take a jump shot and somebody would, like, crowded him or something like that, and then Golden State fans would get, like, super weird. It's like, oh. So, yeah, but, you know, they've kind of grown out of that because he hasn't gotten injured in 2 years, so. Yeah, hopefully that'll happen with Damari Carroll, but just me, the next time he bumps knees with somebody, you're just going to...
I have nothing to say to that because it's spot on. I mean, I just really hope we get to see Damari Carroll for 60 games, because if we don't, you know, fans are going to be barking about that contract and say what you said earlier. It's an albatross. Was it worth signing him? Like, oh, there's just going to be a lot of question marks that are going to come swirling out of nowhere. So I hope we avoid that.
But yeah,
something else that was interesting, though, was Dwayne Casey, when they mentioned that Jared Sullinger is likely going to be the starting power forward. They didn't say he is the starting power forward. They said the job is his to lose. But at the same time, that pretty much means that he is the starting power forward.
Do the Raptors just not want to shoot threes?
I think you underestimate Sullinger's ability to shoot a bit, though.
He shoots 28%.
I know. But, like, when you look at the heat maps and everything, a lot of those are elbow threes, which he doesn't shoot very well. Let's slide some of those into the corner now, where we saw Luis Scola taking them last year,
mm-hmm.
which is, obviously, it's an easier shot for any shooter to make. That's pretty well known. You think that not bump Jared Sullinger's three-point percentage up to maybe 35, you know, mid-30s?
That's like a
somewhere in the respectability.
7-point difference in three-point percentage.
It's huge. I know it's big, but it is an easier shot. And I think his frequency of taking that three is going to be less.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's definitely true. The frequency is probably going to be lesser. He's going to be in the corner. The corner range is definitely shorter, but, you know, he's typically making his two-point shots from, like, the elbow or tip of the key. And that the corner is still farther out than the top of the key. Like, the top of the key is, like, 20 feet. I think the corner is, like, 21, 29, 21 and a half or something like that. So it's still deeper than anything he has inside of the arc.
No, I'm okay with that. I mean, he's got to start making these shots, right? With JV underneath the net, too, these looks are going to be a little bit more open. In Boston, you could argue that they never play with a true center. So this might give him some better spacing on the floor as well.
Okay.
I know you're an avid Jared Sullinger detractor. Okay? Between DeMar DeRozan and Jared Sullinger, those are your two guys that you're just going to knock all season. And you've knocked since offseason, man. So I know you're not going to slow down on that.
I don't like people that... I don't like... And pretty much the past, I would say, 5 years or maybe even 6 years, you know, a championship team had shooters at pretty much every position except for one. Right? So the Raptors have, I would say... You know, three out of the five people on their squad don't shoot threes. You know, just like a cramped spacing, man. It's harder to do stuff when you can't shoot.
Of course.
So that's the only reason. Like, that's the reason why. It's just like, you know, if you watch any team, modern NBA squad, they don't play the same as the Raptors do. The Raptors play like a 90s style of basketball.
Which is something we talked about off the air. But before we get into that, who's to say Patrick Patterson's minutes are just going to diminish? They still said he's going to play starter minutes, so that would mean 30 roughly, probably 30 to 35 a night we're going to see from Patrick Patterson. What's really going to change?
I mean, I guess, you know, they could do the Scola treatment where they have him play, like they have Sullinger play at the beginning and then they take him out early and they'll put in Patrick Patterson. And, like, it kind of makes sense to do that because most squads right now, they kind of start two big men and then they, like, slim down. So you can kind of steal minutes for Jared Sullinger that way, but I just prefer to have three-point shooting all the time. You know, beggars can't be choosers, though.
No, I agree. And I get what you're whole getting at here with the whole DeRozan and Sullinger on the floor at the same time, and then you add in JV, who's shooting threes. I get that, because then you're relying on Kyle Lowry, who, as he's getting older, his shot will naturally regress because, let's face it, nobody's beat Father Time, so that's going to slow his shot a little bit down, just given the way he plays.
Right.
And then, what, you can have guys coming filling off the bench. I mean, you're looking at
They have shooters off the bench, but they're just not in the starting lineup. You got Patrick Patterson, Norman Powell, and Terrence Ross off the bench.
That doesn't really inspire confidence. I'm not going to lie to you here. But I do get what you're saying. Okay, so what should we expect from the power four position then? Is it just, you know, expect Sullinger to start and then Patterson to come in, literally like last year, except instead of Scola, it's now Sullinger? Or
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen. Because I can't imagine them having Sullinger at the end of games, and then they're running like pick and rolls against him or JV, and just like nobody's able to cover it. And then if they're doing it with JV, Sullinger's gonna have to cover the paint, and he's not that good of a protector at the rim.
All right, hold on a second here. What is your ideal picture of Jared Sullinger like? What does he have to do to have a successful season in DeMar Grant's books? Because I feel like by the way you describe Jared Sullinger, this is like a 13th man, dude. Like, this is a guy who's stapled to the bench. Like, he's like the Red Mamba or like the Red Rocket.
Okay. What does it, just, you know, give me the breakdown. What does he do?
I'm asking you. I want you to tell me, because I think Jared Sullinger is serviceable at the NBA. I think he can play this back to the basket a little bit. He's not a great shooter. He's not a terrible shooter. He's just below average. But I feel like that's something that can improve now that he's going to have better spacing playing with a true center. And he's a good rebounder. So I'll give him those things right there. There's obviously a lot to work on with his game. But I feel like you think this guy is not good at basketball.
How is he going to rebound when he's shooting threes? Like, he's a prolific offensive rebounder, but he shoots threes now. Like, he's going to be shooting threes now.
We both agreed that the frequency is going to decrease in his threes, more likely.
It's either one or the other is going to decrease. And this happened with Kevin Love or Chris Bosh. It's like, you know, if you're a power forward, you either shoot threes or you rebound. You can't really do both at the same time.
No, I agree, but he's not a stretch four like those guys are. Or even like a stretch five, sorry, where you got Love and Bosh, who are much more better jump shooters than Jared Sullinger, man.
Mm-hmm.
We can both admit that. So I think he's not going to be posted out there like the same way they were. Like, you'll notice a lot of times where Bosh or Love will kind of drift in offensive sets, and they'll kind of slowly creep out through the three-point line or the elbow, or they'll just pick and pops. We saw that way too much with Bosh and Love, and some people said that took away from one of their best assets, which was their back to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're not going to see that with Sullinger because he's just not as good of a shooter as those guys. So I think we're going to see him still hover around the net a lot more than people are thinking.
Okay. I'm going to do a deep dive on Jaren Sullinger. I want to know like the nitty-gritty about his play style, because on the surface, from what I've looked at, he's okay. I think he's like a bench big. I don't think he's a starting caliber player.
I agree with that. I feel like that's more than spot on, because he's just starting because of the way the Raptors, their roster is constructed. And, you know, people may not like to hear this, and Patrick Patterson says it doesn't matter, but I think he just has that comfort of coming off the bench. So I think that's really why he's starting.
Yeah, you know, some shooters like to just put... I remember David Thorpe was speaking about this on the True Hoop podcast, where, like, when shooters are shooting effectively, they just want to stay in. You know, they don't want to be taken out of the game, so they lose their rhythm. So, like, in this example, you know, Jared Sullinger comes out early, so Patrick Patterson can just play, like, the rest of the entire first quarter. So he'll play, like, 8 minutes in a row, and then, like, another 6 minutes just, like, straight in a row, so he doesn't lose his rhythm when he's shooting. So that may be, like, a thing for Patrick Patterson. Nobody's really asked him that. Maybe I should ask him
that.
Maybe I should ask him that next time I see him.
But that would make sense, though, especially when you put in that context.
Yes.
One last thing with Sullinger, though, man, is when you deep dive into him, I think you're going to reach this kind of conclusion where I don't think Jared Sullinger knows what kind of player Jared Sullinger is either. I know it may sound a bit confusing, but I feel like throughout his time in Boston since he's left Ohio State, he's transformed roles multiple times in Boston where, you know, is he a three-point shooter? Is he guys going to crash the glass? Is he back to the basket? He's kind of drifted between all these different roles that I don't think he truly knows what he is either yet.
It almost depends on how much he weighs, and he's been struggling with his weight. So, like, if you weigh a lot, it's, you know, easy to make space underneath the basket, get those rebounds and stuff. But if you're lightweight, you know, it's a lot easier to move around, get on the perimeter, and make those jump shots and stuff. So,
well, for what it's worth, I mean, we haven't seen him at his heaviest stage, I guess some people will call it. at media day, he looked decent. Like, he looked like he was in good shape. Apparently, the weight's no longer an issue. I mean, you brought that up off the air too. That, hey, he said the weight's not a problem anymore.
Yeah.
Do you buy
every
that?
Every time he's, you know, he always says the weight's not an issue until it becomes an issue, and then. So I'm just, you know, it sounds like I'm really scrutinizing him, but like, he's part of the team now, and that's what I do. I have to scrutinize the team. So I'm just, you know, I'm just really, he's a new addition. Got a different game that I've seen from most players, so I'm going to be keeping an eye on him. But
yeah, you're pretty critical of him. I'll admit that. That's just my opinion on it.
I have to be, you know, kind of have to be, but we'll see. I'll keep an open mind.
Okay, another guy at media day that was brought up who's also, I guess technically he's at the power forward position, but with what was said, it provides more questions than it does answers. Pascal Siakam. The Raptors took him with the 27th pick in this year's past draft. Dwayne Casey told reporters that Siakam might come up and just blow everybody out of the water. And they're possibly expecting him to be a starter by as early as next season. Mm-hmm. What do you make about all that? I know he had a really good summer league. Like, apparently he's been having a good camp. There's a lot to like with his game, but, man, that's optimistic.
He's been blowing
off. Or maybe we're too long.
He's been blowing off the doors for everybody, man. Like, everybody loves him. So is it worth that? Worth work? Ethic must be insane, or I don't know, maybe they're seeing something we just don't see. He might even snag that backup center spot, man.
Who knows? Right? That was the next question. Yeah, because Bebe, Pirtle, these guys, it's a great opportunity for him, but it just sounds like Siakam might just work him out at the gym.
Yeah, and they love those hardworking players. I mean, we love them too. The fans love the hardworking players. Right, so they're like, this guy's basically a Bismack 2.0.
And I don't think it's Bismack 2.0. I actually don't.
That's what it seems like to me when I see him. Like, I've seen like tape of him and stuff, and it kind of seems like Bismack 2.0 to me.
I could buy that, like the whole, like when you watch it on tape.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he reminds me of somebody else when I watch him on tape a little bit more. And it's a person Raptors fans have been putting in. God, they've probably broken the ESPN trade machine with the amount of times they've put this player in there for the Raptors. It's Kenneth Faried. Like, you watch the Manimal play, and he can't really shoot really well, but he's an aggressive rebounder. He hustles. He's tenacious on defense. Not the greatest defender, but he's tenacious. I feel like Siakam is kind of like that.
Okay.
Can't really shoot too well from what I've seen, at least on film. Rebounds the hell out of the ball. Defensively, he's not bad. He keeps his man in front of him. He's square. I don't know. I'm really excited to see more of him, actually. But I feel like he just reminds me of Faried.
Me too. He's on the squad, like, for sure, right? Because he was a...
Some
first-round pick, right? At the end of the first round.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm excited to see him play. Since there's a lot of institutional confidence inside of them, maybe we'll even get to see him play, like, legit time, early in the season especially. I'm in.
What does this mean for Jakob Poeltl?
I have no idea, man. They don't talk about him at all.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. It's kind of weird.
They never speak about him. And for somebody, you know, think of it this way. He was... Jakob Poeltl was like the 9th pick, and Siakam was the 27th pick, and they're raving more about their 27th pick than the 9th pick. So it's a little bit damning, a little damning, and they should have picked Scal.
How did I know that solo jab was coming? Jesus,
they should have picked Scal. Okay, whatever. But yeah, so, for Poeltl, I mean, that's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit of a worrying symptom of his play style. Not his play style, of his, just him in general.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Can Poeltl, Siakam, and Bebe all make this roster? Or does one of them have to go to the 905?
That's a lot of centers. That would be 4 centers on the roster. And
or 3 power forwards, 3 centers, right, depending on how you look at it.
I mean, you really have...
That's a lot of big men.
Yeah, you got Patrick Patterson, Jared Sollinger, Siakam, and then you got Poeltl, and then you have Valanciunas.
Bebe
and Valanciunas. So that's 6 big men on the roster.
And then if you go Carroll,
mm-hmm,
DeRozan,
right,
Powell,
right,
Lowry, Corey Joseph,
mm-hmm, DeLon Wright. I mean,
DeLon Wright, but DeLon Wright's not coming until January.
Yeah.
More likely. We're going to get into him in a second. So let's say Van Fleet.
Mhm.
I feel like we're missing a couple
My
guys
man
here.
Van Fleet, yo, he's making it.
I think just based off DeLon Wright's injury update, there's a good shot he's going to make
it. Yeah, he's definitely making it.
So, you know, that's 12 guys there. Do we put Bruno?
I guess,
like 13.
Yeah.
Like, they'll probably carry the full 15, but, I mean.
It's a lot of big men, man.
That's a lot of big men.
We'll see. They're probably going to.
How much they play then?
It's probably going to be a playoff for that center spot, that backup center. I don't know about Pirtle because they don't really speak about him, but Nogueira and Siakam are definitely going to do some sort of playoff. There's going to probably somebody's going to get influenced in training camp or in those first like 5 or 10 games. Both of them are going to play, and then the coaching staff is probably going to figure out which one that they like more.
Man, to hear Siakam's going to blow the doors off, that just makes me want to see him play right now.
Yeah, me too.
In a preseason game because that's big.
Yeah,
you don't just throw that kind of analogy around.
Yeah, so probably even in training camp, preseason, they'll figure out who's going to be backup center. So those games, especially against the Warriors, can get a little heated, man. Just a little bit.
I can't wait for that. Moving on, though, into DeLon Wright news, somebody you just brought up. It's kind of good. It's kind of bad. The good news is that he expects to get his full range of motion back.
Uh-huh.
Which should happen as early as possibly next week, which in turn means he'll probably start shooting soon. The bad news, though, it sounds like the initial prognosis they gave of him returning within at least 4 months, it sounds like it's going to be a little more than 4 months. It doesn't sound like he's going to be back by December, which would have been a four-month timeline. It sounds more like January, worst-case scenario, February. So, you know, I guess that's kind of bad in a sense where there was a lot expected of DeLon Wright this year. He was supposed to come in, and fans were excited that, you know, he could spell some minutes from not only Kyle Lowry but also Corey Joseph,
because
the Raptors relied heavily on those two last year, and now it's looking like that might not happen until probably February when he's 100%. Like he could be back in January, but he's not going to get just entrenched in full-out minutes right away, you know? I think he's just going to slowly work his way back in, and we're looking at a February return.
Damn. Like even when it was December that we thought he was coming back, it was still pretty bad. But now it's like January, February. Wow. So remember when we made that like the small assumption was like, is this just like a lost year for him? Like this actually might just be a lost year for him, though.
It actually might be. It actually might just be a lost year now. Counter side of this though, does this not bode well for not only, you know, your beloved Fred VanVleet, who I also love as well,
mm-hmm.
but does it not also bode well for Brady Heslop?
Yeah, that's true. You know, there's more space. There's definitely going to be a lot more space on the roster. So, you know, it's possible for Brady. I know you like Brady. I know you want him there.
You know what? I want EJ Singler there. I feel like EJ Singler's a really versatile player. But I like Brady.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really nice guy anytime we talk to him. He can shoot the lights out. He's just a bit undersized,
okay.
Which I think he's hurt his entire life when he's played at this level, but if you give that guy a couple inches, man, that three's going in. So, and the Raptors need perimeter shooting. Like, they need that in the worst way.
Yeah, they need big man perimeter shooting, mostly.
Yeah, I know. That ain't happening, though.
Utah.
That's an interesting name, too. I mean, this battle for the 15th roster spot is actually going to be compelling.
Yeah. Training camp, man. It's where dreams are made or shattered.
Where dreams are made or shattered, holy crow.
I mean, this was, you know, this absence, I guess, would mean a lot more for Corey Joseph. Probably get, like, an extra 1 or 2 minutes, but, you know, for the people,
which is,
it's okay, like, but it means a lot more for the 15th man making this squad to be on the Raptors.
Yeah, of course. But that was something they wanted to avoid this year, though. They said they wanted to manage the minutes a bit better, not only Lowry, but also Corey Joseph.
Yeah, dude, so maybe we'll get some ball handling from Norman Powell.
That would be interesting.
I mean, before the summer league, they kept talking about him being more of a ball handler and him finding people like the pass too. So there's a little bit of primer for him to be a ball handler, man.
So, man, going off everything we've said throughout this podcast so far, does it not kind of sound like the Raptors might play a bit of a bigger lineup this year? Slower pace. I mean, it can't get much slower than what they're playing already, but slow pace, big style lineup.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, it's going to...
It's 90s relic basketball.
90s relic, Eric. Yeah. Woo! Mid-range and dual big man.
Stop that.
We're crashing the boards. Offensive, defensive boards are crashing it. What is a three-point shot? I don't understand what that means.
Like, you know what they say, though. The roster takes over the personality of its coach. Dwayne Casey is a hardworking, defense first, we'll get our points, not necessarily later, but we'll get our points however we get them type coach.
We're the Grizzlies. So,
holy hell, we are the Grizzlies.
The Grizzlies.
With no Z-Bo.
Yeah, with no Z-Bo, but we got our version of Mike Conley and Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry is actually much better than Mike Conley.
I was just going to ask you that next. Kyle Lowry or Mike Conley? Who would you take?
I think Kyle Lowry is better than Mike Conley just because I
think he's more of a dynamic scorer.
Yeah, that and he has like the Kyle Lowry play where like the ball will just like happen to bounce into his hands or like he somehow gets his offensive rebound or he'll like dive for the ball and bat it to somebody. Mike Conley doesn't really get many of those.
Mike Conley's just kind of like a legitimate floor general where he's just always in control. He's just calm, cool, collective. Doesn't take many bad shots, doesn't make many bad passes. He's just kind of a safe player.
Yeah, you know, it's good. He was great for any team that, like, has dynamic, like, shooting guards or small forwards or something that's, like, dynamic that just needs the ball. He's great for that team because he'll just be like, all right, you got it. And then he just plays defense. You know, he'll be open for three. He'll shoot the three. Maybe he'll get some drives to the rim. But he's really, like, a defer. Like, he'll deflect passes to, like, he'll pass the ball to a lot of people. Like, he's selfless. He doesn't really care.
I'm trying to think of where he'd be a good fit aside from Memphis. That's what I was trying to think of right now in my head.
If he was on the Cavs, that'd be great for him.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. What about, I hate saying Boston because I feel like Isaiah Thomas is not bad there. Like, he's a great scorer. He can do a lot of things with the ball, but he's not like a true bona fide point guard. Whereas, like, Mike Conley is a very, you know, like we just said, your prototypical point guard. And Boston is just like the trendy place.
He was on the Jazz. He'd be pretty good.
Yeah, well, they have George Hill now.
If he was on the Timberwolves, that would actually make like the Timberwolves like a serious playoff team for me.
Yeah, that actually would. That'd be a really good fit. Because Rubio's overrated, in my opinion.
Get him out of here. Yo, that's one player that I can't even believe that is still in the league. Like his past...
No defense.
No, he actually plays... He's actually a pretty good defender and usually leads the league in steals, but like... He's just a good positional defender. He doesn't have the athleticism that you would want from, you know, an elite defender, but he's good.
I'll put him as, like, an average defender, man.
I think he's good. Yo, you underrate the small point guards, man. The small point guards.
I don't underrate the small point guards. I mean, I think steals, look, it shows up, it looks nice in the box score and all that.
Now I'm going to just stop mentioning steals when I talk about good defenders.
No. I don't mind. It's just the thing with Rubio is a lot of times he gets beat, man, and, like, flat out beat. And he's not durable.
He's a good position. Oh, yeah, he's not durable. But he's a good positional defender. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. So.
Okay. So you're saying he's kind of like a... Actually, I shouldn't even say like a Steve Nash.
No, because Steve Nash was terrible on defense.
Yeah, Steve Nash is not a good defender.
But, yeah, Kyle Lowry at least great on defense. You know? I'm enjoying the Kyle Lowry saga, and I'm hoping it doesn't end with this contract negotiation that's coming up.
Yeah, and he actually talked about that in media today, too, where he said what I think everybody expected. I'm not answering any questions or discussing my upcoming contract.
Mm-hmm.
So
Shrewd answer.
Nothing's changed there, you know? I mean, DeMar DeRozan was poking fun at him, saying that he can't wait to send jokes his way about, hey, did you see the latest rumor, the latest speculation about what's going on with you and your contract? Because obviously DeMar endured that all last season, and now it's Kyle's turn to endure that. So
right.
That'll be interesting. What do you make of him being the oldest player, too, though, on the Raptors?
It's not that big of a deal. It kind of showed me that they don't really have many veterans on the Raptors.
Right?
You ever think about that? Because, like, the 76ers, even they have Elton Brand on their team.
So, come trade deadline this year, it's going to be the Raptors need a veteran for the playoffs.
Oh, yep.
You can already see it, right? It writes itself.
Like, Tayshaun Prince. Reach the squad.
Tayshaun Prince. Dude. The fans are going to cry for Vince Carter again.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. You'd be able to hit some threes in crunch time.
Which they need.
Yeah, they need three-point shooting.
Hold on. You just said crunch time?
Yeah.
So you're having VC on the floor in crunch time?
VC for crunch time threes, baby.
This is not 2000.
I need a three, VC, you're in. I need you to redeem yourself.
Oh, my goodness.
Bam. Paul Pierce moment.
Man, you literally just stole what I was going to say. I was going to say, wouldn't it be something if we got a Paul Pierce moment out of VC?
Yeah,
I was literally going to say that.
So, yeah, it'd be a perfect Paul Pierce moment for him. Get some redemption. Come on, man. You don't want to tell me you don't want to see that happen.
No, of course I do. I mean, any Raptors fan who doesn't have a soft spot for Vince Carter, look, I'll put this plain and simple here. They're full of shit. Because you can hate the man for whatever happened and, you know, the way he kind of sulked and cried his way to Toronto, but those Rod Babcock years, man, you'd want out too if you're on the team. Nobody wanted to be here.
Yeah.
It was an absolute tire fire. And I don't think that overshadows everything that Vince Carter's done for not only this team, but the city and basketball in Canada as a whole.
Yeah, just basketball.
And I think people can never overlook that. And I think VC will forever just have a soft spot amongst Raptors fans.
Yeah, he does for me, man. Those dunks.
Yeah, same.
2001 Slam Dunk Championship.
Man, the ACC had a different buzz to it. Like, it has a buzz now, but at one point you could argue that we had the most exciting player
in the league.
NBA.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah. Like, literally, fans would go and see, not the Raptors, they'd see Vince Carter.
Mm.
And no matter what people like to say about the NBA, in my opinion, there's a couple teams that you pay and go see. But for the most part, you're paying to go see certain superstars.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so even when he was on the road, people would, like, cheer for him when he was, like, throwing down crazy, like, reverse dunks or 360s and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was awesome. Every night you had to watch the highlight reel just to see what VC did.
Yeah. It's a shame. He's leaving soon, man.
Well, all these guys are leaving. All these players from the 2000s are going
to
be gone.
He's in that generation that's about to leave. Him, Chris Bosh, Kevin Garnett.
Paul Pierce.
Tim Duncan.
Well, Paul Pierce actually announced that, you know, he's going to be retiring after this season, so.
Yeah.
That kind of sucks.
Yeah.
You ready to move on? I remember watching Paul Pierce when I was a kid when he played at Kansas, and I was like, hey, this guy's awesome.
They used to hate him in Boston. Like, they used to despise him. Like, the way he played, like, people thought he was,
I was really selfish.
Really selfish. You know, that happens with any type of scorer, I'm starting to realize. Like, if it's a good or great player that never wins a championship, they're like, yo, that dude is selfish.
Yep, that happens all the time. You see it all the time.
Even happened to Michael Jordan once before he won his 6 championships. Like, this guy's so selfish, he never passes the ball.
Well, that's because he had such a hard time trying to figure out a way to beat the Pistons and the Celtics, and then, you know, the team got better and everything changed from there.
Yeah, same thing for Paul Pierce, man. That turnaround from, like, I think they lost 15 games that one season, and then, like, yo, we got Ray Allen, and then, yo, we got KG. And then everybody loves Paul Pierce all of a sudden.
Everybody loves Paul Pierce all of a sudden.
Yo, man, the history books aren't going to tell you that. You got to turn into the Tower podcast or stuff like that.
Yeah, no, they're not going to tell you that.
Yeah, they're just going to be like, Paul Pierce, great scorer. One of the best Celtics ever. Well, he probably isn't even one of the best Celtics ever, but still.
There's a lot of good Celtics.
There's so many good Celtics.
When you go through the list, holy crow.
But yeah, they're going to be like, yeah, Paul Pierce, they loved him. And like,
They low-key hated him for the first, like, 8 years.
Yeah, it's like, not until 2008 when he was winning championships with the team. That's, like, pretty much the only time that they loved him. And after that, of course.
Yep. One of his running mates is actually Kevin Garnett in Boston there, where they won the title, obviously. He retired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the big ticket. Arguably the greatest defensive player of all time in NBA history. I've seen that thrown around recently. Man, thoughts on KG's career and him retiring?
He was my second favorite basketball player when I was a kid. Number one was Allen Iverson. And then, seriously, the number one was Allen Iverson, right? And then KG was right after, and they're even, you know, kind of different, really different personalities. KG is just like, I don't know what it was about him. It was like the baldness with like the forked goatee, the fact that he was like always hyperactive. I don't know what it was. I honestly don't know.
Always hyperactive.
I just don't know what it was, but I loved him, and he was one of my favorite players. And then it was like, his mid-range shooting was pretty cool to me when I was a kid. Again, I was a kid, right, when I was watching him, so I wasn't like, yo, this guy's post-ups are amazing, and his control in the paint is amazing. And I was just like, yo, this guy's goatee is awesome.
I was kind of the same way. I mean, I was young, too, watching him play, and for me, it was just man, just the nickname, the Big Ticket, watching him come out of high school, the way he would literally just shoot that jump shot. Him and Tim Duncan, their jump shots were mesmerizing.
Mm-hmm.
I could watch him shoot all day. And then I remember going to watch him live at the ACC when I was a kid and just double-doubles every single night. I know I'm kind of clumping him and Tim Duncan here together, but they kind of were, in my opinion. I mean, watching both these guys come up roughly around the same time, and Tim Duncan's obviously had a lot more success in terms of titles
right.
and, you know, what the Spurs have done, but KG was just remarkable to watch with not much around him. I mean, Wally Szczerbiak was brought in there and a couple other guys, Sam Cassell and whatnot, to help him get over the top. It never happened in Minnesota.
It's free will for a little bit.
It was misfit toys, always playing around this amazing player, and it never worked.
Man, you brought up Tim Duncan, and they wore the same number, but like they're the complete opposite personalities.
Yep.
It's like absolute opposite. Even their careers were like absolute opposites, you know. Kevin Garnett, I would probably peak Garnett was probably better than peak Tim Duncan, but
Ooh, that's interesting.
But like,
man, peak Tim Duncan was beast.
But peak, okay. Maybe we'll have like a discussion about this, you know, off the air when we're like able to look at the statistics and stuff like that. But like,
we're splitting hairs though.
Yeah, but Kevin Garnett, like at that, you know, his absolute height of his powers, was like basically doing everything on the court at a big man at a big man position, right? And
on a bad team.
I know, it was on a terrible team. It was an awful team. I mean, Tim Duncan was also doing his stuff. Like the Spurs weren't good the first couple years, but anyways. You know, they even had, like, opposite career arcs, you know. Tim Duncan won his first championship mad early. And then Kevin Garnett had to just, like, wallow in Minnesota until he left for Boston. And then they won that championship. And it's, like, I feel like if you just see him, like, after the championship, he's, like, crying, you know. And he was, like, shouting, like, anything is possible!
I'll never forget that, man.
Right? And, you know, Tim Duncan is just like, he wins 5 championships. I can't even quote a word from him from when he won. You see what I'm talking about? Like, they're completely off. Even their career arc.
Yeah.
Like completely
Tim Duncan's always been really quiet, you know.
But they were.
Just goes about his business. Like, he's probably the lamest superstar ever. I'm just going to be honest here. Like, when you think about it, Tim Duncan is he's just Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
Like, you can't say anything about him. I mean, what's the most trademark thing about him aside from the titles? The fact that he uses the backboard frequently.
Yeah.
He goes off glass and probably doesn't call it.
Yeah, like, that's it. He doesn't really have like a trademark move. He kind of has that like weird like sideways
release.
Yeah, when he's like the post up fadeaway, but it's like over his right shoulder, and he kind of like flicks it in. I don't really know how to describe. You kind of have to watch it.
No, I know what you're saying. And then, meanwhile, you got KG, who is, like, brash, in your face, borderline DMX on the court, the way he talks so much shit, which
like,
is awesome.
The smack talk was just, like, unconsiderable amounts.
Gary Payton-like, yeah. The F-bomb counter would just be off the charts with him, too, on the floor. Is awesome. Like, I just love his intensity.
There's even a hilarious video with, like, language I can't replicate on this podcast of him, like, you know, and the Timberwolves. This is last season where somebody took a jump shot, and he's just like, he can't shoot! He can't shoot, and then the person missed. He's like, "Hell no!" And there were some other words that I can't
use. Man, I can already picture.
But yeah, man, I loved it, man. I loved him.
Hey, for what it's worth, I still got that KG jersey, Timberwolves, all black, in my closet. Yes. Probably don't fit no more, but it's still there.
Those ones are sick.
Yeah, I love those ones. Another player, former Raptor, who, you know, he hasn't retired, but he might be forced to retire, is Chris Bosh. Obviously, the blood clots and his health is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Not an optimal level where he can play, at least. Is this the end?
If it's not, it should be. Because I don't want to see a player die on the court.
Yeah.
And, like, that's a real possibility with him. Like, it's, you know, for every player, obviously, there's a chance. But, like, the chance for him is, like, exacerbated by this the blood loss or the blood clots in his body, so I just don't want to see it happen, man. And so it has happened, but not in the NBA. And Eric Spoelstra was actually on the staff of the team where it happened to a player. I can't remember the player's name right now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he was on the staff of a team where like a player had actually died on the court. So I can't imagine the heat, and especially Eric Spoelstra. I don't think they want that to happen. And you know, I think they just want to see him alive, you know?
Yeah,
instead
of course.
Instead of dead, you'd prefer to see somebody alive than dead, so.
Like, I think, obviously, this goes without saying, his health is his number one priority. Luckily for him, I mean, he's won an NBA title.
Yeah,
he's got a big contract.
Two of them.
Yeah, like, he's kind of checked off a lot of career milestone goals in the NBA that some guys never check off. So, I'm not saying that's more incentive for him to retire, because, look, once you're a professional athlete, you don't ever want to leave that.
That's true.
I mean, you got to be crazy to want to retire. Like, most of the time you're forced to retire because you can't do it no more. But for Chris Bosh to have to retire because of health reasons at the age he is, you got to feel for the guy.
Yeah, the player's name was Hank Gathers, by the way. Yeah. You know, everybody says, like you just said, like, you don't want to retire until you have to. Like, this is one of the moments where you kind of have to. You know, just so your body doesn't break down on the court, you know? I don't know. I feel bad. I feel bad, but I also feel kind of happy for him, because he definitely has, like, a Hall of Fame career lined up, you know, if he does retire right now. And he doesn't really have any... He doesn't really have any boxes he needs to check off anymore. You know, he's kind of done everything so far. I don't think he doesn't... He never had an MVP, but that's... Other than that, he's pretty much done everything else, so...
So, considering how many records, you know, he's up there with the Raptors in the record books. I know Vince Carter is obviously somebody, when he's done playing, they'll likely hang some sort of rafter up there for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they'll retire the number 15, but there'll be something up there for VC. Chris
Bosh,
I
think they would retire number 15.
I'd be all for that.
Yeah, me too. I think most fans would be for that, so why not? You know.
Okay, so what do you do with Chris Bosh? Anything at all, or are you just kind of...
I don't know. See, like, for Vince Carter, he had, like, this, you know, this resonance, not with just the NBA, but Canada basketball. Like, it literally everybody, even in the Olympics when he jumped over a dude and dunked on him, that was crazy.
Yeah, it was insane.
Right? So he has, like, this, you know, this gravitas of pretty much everybody. But Chris Bosh, you know, he's a great player for the Raptors. He was kind of hauling the carcass of, like, the Jamario Moons and TJ Fords.
Jamario Moon, oh my goodness, sorry. Yeah, go on. You just hit a spot there.
So he's kind of hauling the carcass of a Raptors team with them on the squad, but he wasn't, like, earth-shattering. Like, he, for example, like Kevin Garnett is probably going to get retired, like, his number retired by the Timberwolves. And you look at all the things that Kevin Garnett did for the Timberwolves. You know, Chris Bosh did a lot of great things for the Raptors, but it wasn't on the same level.
Yeah, I can't argue against that. I mean, he played 7 seasons here. Average, what, 9 boards a game, 20 points, 1 block. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's hanger number up in the banners or up in the rafters good, but I think it's something that's debatable.
Yeah.
You can make a case. Like, you could at the very least make a case for him. He was an all-star in 5 seasons for the Raptors. 5 out of 7 years an all-star, too. I mean...
Yeah, he was a good player. He was a very good player.
Yeah, like, he was just... He was kind of what we should have had with LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to go there. But...
Right in the field bed.
Yeah. I was just saying, man, we should have had Aldridge and Bosh. I'm not going to dwell on this, but Bosh's career trajectory is kind of like that.
Yeah.
Just open an old wound.
But, yeah, I think he's going to retire. And, you know, I just wanted to say goodbye. Love you, Chris Bosh.
it's been rough when you think about all the guys retiring, man.
Oh, man, the retirement class is going to be insane. If I was Paul Pierce, I'd be like, nah, man, I'm going to peace out this season because I'm wanting...
Yeah, I got one more.
Paul Pierce should have just like been like, nah, man, I'm about to retire right now. So he could just hop into that great retirement class.
That's literally a who's who of, like, man...
Of 2000s basketball.
Stars. Yeah. But I got to mention this before we go, because I know I said VC's left.
Mm-hmm.
There's also one guy left still playing.
Not Dirk.
Disco Dirk. He's still going strong out there.
He's still playing pretty well, which is amazing at his age.
Yeah, man. The German bomber's still out there. The Mavericks still believe they could build their franchise around
him. Wow. That's crazy within itself. He's 38 years old, you know.
Yeah. No. When does he retire? What, 2 more years?
I guess. maybe we'll see how Harrison Barnes is this year. If Harrison Barnes isn't very good, I'm pretty sure he's...
Oh, he's out. I think he'll retire.
So, but if Harrison Barnes is pretty good, then he'll stick around for probably another year. But, yeah, he's almost out too. 38, nearly 40, man. People are playing until they're pretty old nowadays.
Is Andre Miller still around? Do we have an Andre Miller sighting?
I cannot name a team that he's on. I honestly cannot.
All right, we're going to stick with Dirk for now as our last 2000s guy. Because, man, if Andre Miller's the last man standing.
Elton Brand is still around.
Oh, yeah, Elton Brand's there too. I forgot. Okay.
So, yeah, there's still some people.
There's some. That'll actually be sad when the last 2000s player retires. Because mm-hmm. What an era that was.
I mean, yeah, it was an all right era. I think that was, like, one of the worst, like, objectively speaking, it's probably, like, one of the worst eras of basketball, though.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. But I think from an NBA standpoint of the league taking steps forward and not just marketing the league, but these superstars in a way that we've never seen before, without saying is the best one for that.
Yeah, Vince Carter, baby.
Yeah, it transcended what you see now with the way players are marketed and the money they're pulling in. That started in that era with those guys.
Yeah, that's when Vince Carter blew up, Tracy McGrady, Kobe Bryant.
Iverson, Kobe, Shaq. Dude, even Chris Webber to a certain extent. Like, these guys were something else. And, hey, by the way, Tim Duncan, any shoe deals ever?
Nope.
Tim Duncan just being Tim Duncan.
Oh, man, he's, like, probably one of the most celebrated. He's weirdly one of the most celebrated players in the league, and he's just, like, the most low-key player in the league.
Because I think people feel like they could beat Tim Duncan, like they could relate with him, where it's just like, you know, he's just an everyday guy.
Yeah, he's a dude.
Just happens to win a lot of titles and nail a lot of mid-range jump shots.
Oh, man, goodbye to 2000s basketball.
And on that note, I think we'll say goodbye to this podcast as well. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. As always, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and SoundCloud at Tip of the Tower. You can also leave us a review on iTunes at Tip of the Tower. Just feel free to leave your comments there. We always appreciate the feedback. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Chris O'Kranitz. If you want to follow DeMar, you can follow DeMar at DeMar J. Grant. And if you want to reach out to the show, you can reach out to us on Twitter and Facebook, also at Tip of the Tower. That's a lot about Tip of the Tower, but that's where you can find us, guys. We'll see you next week. Enjoy the Raptors training camp. We'll be back to talk then. Take care.
Later days.